Amen. All right, I'm on. Right? Good. All right, you know, it's one of the reasons, one thing that's great about being married, if you're a man, is that you never have to worry about having anything in your nose. Kathy appreciates it. That's right. Because when Wayne gets up to speak, buddy, she's checking his nose out. Let me tell you, even before he gets up, and she'll let him know you got some in your nose. Yeah, I mean, women had the uncanny ability to see stuff in our noses across the room. So, yes. Thank you, Kathy, for that. That laugh. That's right. Thank you very much. All right. Such is the life of a pastor's wife. Does he have everything? Is his zipper up? Is his collar right? You know, all of that stuff goes through their minds. All right. Here we are in session number 5. All right. Don't forget the sex session comes tomorrow morning. That will be 6 is sex. You know, session sex is 6. You know. That was by... Okay, you're finally getting that. Okay, all right.
Followed by how to have a good fight.
That's right. Followed by how to have midget fight. All right. Terry was telling me about that last night, about that brochure, and I said, is that politically correct now? There you go. Little people fight. All right. Okay. All right. I'm going to ask Ray if he will read our key verse out of Philippians for us. Ray, stand up if you would and read that out.
2:3-5.
Amen. Thank you for that, Ray. And the thing that I'm wanting everybody to clearly understand is your marriage is not primarily about you two. Right? It's about your relationship to God. And so when a husband chooses to unconditionally love his wife, he is first of all choosing to be obedient to God. Because it's God who says we're to love our wives unconditionally. And so if I, as a man, say, no, that's too much trouble. Well, it's between me and God first, right? It's going to hurt the relationship with my wife, but I've got to be dealing with the fact that I'm resisting God. I am disobeying what God has told me to do. And so I want us to elevate it so that it's not just your spouse. Because, you know, it's easy to get in some kind of rationalization. Well, I'm not going to love her because she this and this and this. And you know, it's easy to get it on that level. But, you know, I'm raising it up. It's all about you and God first. Your surrender to His Lordship in your life. You desire to be obedient in His life so that you will glorify Him as you are more like Christ in your marriage. So let's keep it at that level. Make sure that that's where we are primarily find ourselves. And now we come to the passage about wives respecting their husbands. Now, if you need to, turn back to where we had the 1 Peter 3 passage. And that would be back over in lesson 4, right? Somebody want to give us a page number there? 14. All right, 14. Here we go. Now, I want to just touch base on this overall, and then we'll get back to the particulars of it, ladies. All right. Respect your husband. What does it mean to respect your husband? Now, we have given you the amplified version of this passage. All right? And you will find that on page 15. All right? So if you look at page 15, I didn't talk about it when we were there the first time, but I want to bring it back up because it's sometimes difficult for women to understand, well, what does it mean to respect him? And so the translators of the Amplified Version of the Bible come from the philosophy that no one English word adequately conveys a Greek word. And if you've ever translated from one language to another, you know that's the case. It's hard to get a one-word comparison, because in one language, the word may have nuances and meanings that just the single word in the other language won't convey. And so you need to sometimes do a phrase or do several words. Well, the Amplified Bible is built with that concept that no one English word adequately expresses certain Greek words, and so they have amplified it, as it is with this passage and this word respect. So on page 15, Ephesians 5:33, the Amplified Version, however, let each man of you, without exception, love his wife as being, in a sense, his own very own. Let the wife see that she respects and reverences her husband. Now, he's going to explain this biblical concept of respect. That she notices him, she regards him, she honors him, she prefers him, she venerates and esteems him, she defers to him, praises him, and loves and admires him exceedingly. And then in 1 Peter 3:2. When they observe your pure and modest way in which you conduct yourselves, together with your reverence for your husband, you are to feel for him all that reverence includes: to respect, defer to, revere him, to honor, esteem, appreciate, prize, and in the human sense, to adore him. That is, to admire and praise and be devoted, deeply love and enjoy your husband. Now, that's some pretty heavy stuff. But, ladies, if you will take that verse and print it out, put it on your mirror, so in the morning when you're putting on, whenever you put your makeup on, you see that verse and you ask yourself, have I done those things to my husband today? Or in the morning, will I commit myself to be this way with my husband? It will greatly enhance your marriage. Now, over in 1 Peter 3, Peter picks up on this idea of Sarah and how she treated Abraham. And I want you to look at that for a moment, because that brings up some ideas that women find themselves having when they think about reverencing and adoring and admiring their husband. They think, what? He's going to get the big head, right? He's hard enough to live with now. I start treating him like that, man, he is going to be one hard guy to live with. Well, Terry, for years, kind of felt like it was her job to keep me from having a big head. And I keep telling her, don't worry about that. The church does a good job, right? The church does a good job to keep that from happening. I need encouragement, really, from you. I need to be built up. All right, look at what it says about Sarah in verse 5. For in this way, in former times, the holy women also, who hoped in God, used to adorn themselves, being submissive to their own husbands, just as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. I've been up to Terry to call me Lord for a long time, and she just can't get the concept. But the idea is, the fear that women have that the husband is going to take advantage, he's going to abuse his authority. Look at what it says. And you have become her children if you do what is right, and that is to highly respect him. To call him Lord was just a term of great respect, all right? If you do what is right without being frightened by any fear. So I want you to know the apprehension or the fear or reservation that you have if you think, man, if I treat him with this kind of respect, he's going to take advantage of me, or he's going to in some way mistreat me because he thinks he's, you know, so great. That is a normal fear, but do not let that fear keep you from doing what God has called you to do, and that is to respect your husband. God can control that man. God can keep him and will keep him, I believe, from using that respect that you give him, from using it and harming you and turning it in a negative way against you or the kids or the family. Treated with respect, the man normally will rise up to honor that respect. To be treated with respect gives him a desire to be more respectful rather than him thinking, oh man, I got it made now. She thinks I hung the moon so I can treat her like I want. That's not the reaction that most men have. Most men think, man, I appreciate that. I appreciate that respect and I will live up to that respect and I will seek to even do better and be more respectful. All right, here we get started now in our notes. First, he needs respect in the area of his conquest. His respect, he needs respect. Do you respect his need to work and to achieve? I retired or got retreaded from pastoring and I ended up getting in, as I told you, into helping my son-in-law who has an insurance business. I got into helping him with insurance And I'm working, doing some volunteer work as a court-appointed special advocate for kids in the foster system. And, you know, and Terry's saying, you're busier now than you were when you were pastoring. I thought when you retired, you were going to slow down. Well, a man has a need to achieve. He has a need to conquest. You know, that's why guys climb Mount Everest. You know, you have a few ladies that do it, but for every lady that does it, you have hundreds of men. We just have that need to conquer, to conquest. You know, the pioneers, the ones that were going and exploring new areas and new regions, that's something men do. And women think, well, why is he doing that? Why does he have to go to the South Pole? Why is that some? But men want to conquer. They want to achieve. It is built within us. Men are born to achieve and to work. In Genesis 2, the Lord God took the man, put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and to keep it. God intended for men to work before the flood, before man sinned. Sin just made it harder. But from the beginning, work is not a part of the curse. We are made to work. We desire to work. A man's self-worth is tied into his work and what he does and how well he does it. Now, I'm not saying that should be, but that's what is, right? A man who is without a job, it can work on his self-esteem. It can be so difficult on him. You get a guy that gets fired from a job and he doesn't have one, it can be so difficult. I mean, ladies, it is hard because so much of our identity, is usually tied up with our work. And I think that's part of the curse, that the ground would be harder for us to bring forth the labor and the work. And so we get so tied up in our work. I mean, if men meet one another, it won't be long in the conversation till they'll say, well, what do you do for a living? Right? That's how we identify. What do you do for a living? Or who are you? Oh, instead of saying, well, I'm A.T. Stewart, I'm the wife of Terry Stewart, I'm the father of Dumbabub, I'll say, oh, I'm a pastor, right? We just talk in those terms, right? What we do, who we are. And so we need you to appreciate our desire to achieve and to do things. And you know, even if it's, want to catch that biggest bass that there is. Men, that's why we hunt. That's why we do those things. It's a challenge. We love a challenge. We love to conquer. I mean, it's just in our nature. It's in our DNA, and we need you to appreciate that about us. Instead of thinking, you doing that? Aren't you doing enough? Why do you need to? We need it. It's just in our DNA, all right? So, now we come to the chart. Your husband will feel you respect his desire to work and achieve. Now again, guys, you're rating your wife on these categories. Ladies, you rate yourself, what you think you're doing. You tell him verbally or in writing that you value his work efforts. You express your faith in Him related to His chosen field. You know, honey, you do a great job at so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so. Man, I appreciate that, how good you do your job. You listen to His work stories as closely as you expect Him to listen to yours and the accounts of what happened in the family. You see yourself as His helpmate and counterpart and talk with Him about this whenever possible. You know, I'm here to help you. You know, I don't want to run the family, right? I want you to, but I want to help you and I want to be here. You allow Him to dream as you did when you were courting. Men, and some more than others, are dreamers. Visionaries, we call them. These are the guys that come up with the great ideas. You know, I am not a visionary. But, man, you got a pastor who's a visionary. He's in building programs here. He's in mission programs there. I mean, he is just, he can run people ragged with all the visions. Now, I do have ideas. And here's what happens. I come home and I say, you know, Terry, I'm thinking about so-and-so and so-and-so. All right, now I'm just in the thinking stuff. I mean, I'm just putting this out there. But she, in her mind, what she hears is, uh-oh, he's going to do it. Right, I got to start convincing him not to do it now. And so I finally have learned over the years, because we've talked about this, why do you react when I mention just an idea? Because I feel like you're going to do it, and I got to stop you from doing it. I got to save you from yourself, right? So I've learned to say, look, now I'm just thinking about this. You know, it's just out for discussion. Nothing's been determined at all. I just want to lay it out there. And then I can say what I'm thinking, and she doesn't have to react because she knows it's not a done deal and all that kind of stuff. Because see, that's what happens when we lead and the wife submits. She gets in this idea, well, look, if he wants to lead a crazy way, I got to go. And so if I hear this craziness starting, I got to start saying something. Well, you know, we're going to be so far down the road, we can't turn back. So it might help, guys, just to say, you know, I'm just thinking, this is an idea I got. You know, I'm thinking about going into landscaping business. Or, what? Landscaping? You know, just say, okay, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's think about it. Right? Because, again, these visions can make you very insecure because you're thinking, he's going to change his job and he's going to do this and he's going to do that and where are we going to get the money? We're not going to have time and I don't see him much now and I'm never going to see him if he does this. And you poo-poo it, and what do? You get in that crazy cycle. He's feel disrespected. You start trying to, and then it just goes, right? Whereas if you simply said, oh, that's a good idea. Why don't we just think about it a little bit? And he'll probably, you know, that's what happened to me. I have these ideas, and then I start thinking about them, and they're not that good after all, right? And I'd come to that conclusion on my own if she just gives me enough time. So, you know, yeah, hey, well, why don't you think about that a little bit? That's fine. Think about it. And then I'll probably decide not to do it anyway. And then if I say, well, let's talk about it a little more, then you can start engaging, right? Visionaries need to make that desire to achieve. All right. All right, a man needs to protect, and provide, and he needs for you to respect his desire to protect and to provide in the family. A man will gladly die for his family. That man you are sitting beside would not hesitate. He would not hesitate one second if you and your children's lives were in danger. He would step up immediately and give his life. He may be a mild-mannered man, and you may think, no, not my Bill. No, excuse me. I'm trying to think of somebody's name's not here. Not my Amos. We don't have an Amos here, right? No, not my Amos preacher. He's too mild-mannered. You know, no. Let me tell you, that tiger within him would come out in a second. We have the need to protect our family, to provide for our family. A man has a sense of domain. That's why when somebody comes to the door that he doesn't know and you don't know, he is very protective. And you even think he's rude. You are rude to them. I didn't know who they were. I didn't know what they wanted. A man has a sense of domain, a sense of protection of his property and of his domain. So he, especially he is, this, A, he'll die for his family. B, he is especially sensitive to put downs in the area of providing for his family. We want to provide for our family. We do want to provide for you. We work hard to provide for you. And when we're not providing like we want to, we feel bad about that. You know, we'll talk to the boss. We want to raise. We think about getting another job. We want to provide. Now, here's something. A woman says, man, I just don't have anything to wear. And we talked about that, right? Now, as a man, what I hear is, I'm not providing enough for you that you got something to wear. I'm not doing a good job at providing. Now, she didn't mean that, men. That was the furthest thing from her mind. But ladies, that's what I heard. And most of your husbands will hear that. You say, man, we got this. I wish we had a house as big as Amos over there. Now, what does he hear? Guys, what do you hear?
Overtime.
There you go. I got to do more work. I got to provide more. She wants a bigger house. She's not satisfied with our house. I am not providing like I need to provide. That makes him feel disrespected. You say something like that, next thing you know, he's not saying a word. And you're thinking, what happened here? I thought we were going great. And all of a sudden, he's gone quiet on me. Right? He's gone silent. What did I say? You know, you have no clue. But he takes that personally. And he feels disrespected. I wish you'd get a job and make more money. I'm tired of us being on the shoestring financially and having to fight every month to pay the bills. Man, that crushes him. He knows that y'all are struggling financially. He wants to do better. But for you to say that gets him disrespected, and then he can get on that cycle and come back at you and say, well, why don't you do more to help out? If you didn't spend so much, we wouldn't have this financial problem. You know, and then there it goes. So he needs respect. He needs your respect in to his desire to protect and to provide. All right, here we go. Your husband will feel appreciated when you appreciate his desire to protect and provide. When you verbalize your admiration of him for protecting you and being willing to die for you. You praise his commitment to provide for and protect you and the family. He needs to know you don't take this for granted. You empathize with when he reveals his male mindset about position or status or rank or being one up or one down, particularly at work. See, we want to be the best at what we do. That is just a driving force in us, ladies. That's what this competition thing's all about. You know, again, I know women involved in competitive sports, but you know, the men, they go at it toe-to-toe, head-to-head. Man, you know, guys can't even have a friendly game without it. Starts off friendly, pick up basketball, and it ends up people bumping into each other and knocking each other. I mean, that competitiveness, that desire to win, to be the best, it's in us. And when you acknowledge and realize we are working and striving, and when we, you know, it was a rude awakening when I realized one time early in my life there's always going to be somebody better than I was. You know, I wanted to be the best, and I realized I wasn't. There's always going to be somebody better. Bigger churches. Always going to be somebody better. But you know, you still want to be the best. You want to work at it. You want to strive toward it. But when you have those moments that you just realize, you know, I'm never going to get this raise at work. I'm never going to get that promotion. I'm stuck. And he shares that with you. That's a moment for you to empathize. You quietly and respectfully voice concerns about finances and offer solutions on where you might be able to cut spending. Respectfully. Well, you know, I know we're struggling with our finances. You know, maybe I can cut here or cut there. What do you feel like I can do to help? You know, he feels respected. All right, so that's his desire to protect and provide, and you respect that. The next area is the area of authority. You respect his desire to serve and to lead. Now here we get the whole concept of biblical headship. And we have a whole talk we've done on wives be submissive to husband, what that means and what it does not mean. And I see me afterwards, I can, or email me at at atstewart.com, and I will give you the link where you can listen to messages about this whole concept of submission and what it is and what it's not, about men leading and understanding that. But God has placed it within us to be leaders. That's our job. We're to lead in the home. We're to lead in the church. Just as Christ is head of the church, the husband is to be head of the family. It's not something that we have chosen to put ourselves in. God has placed that role in our lives. And in that, I believe he's created within us a desire to lead. But that leadership has got to be a servant leadership. As Christ gave himself for the church, it's not a macho leadership. It's not a do what I say or else leadership. But it is a sacrificial service. We lead through our sacrifice. We lead as we put the others in our family and their interest above our own. We lead when we go on vacation and the trunk is almost full and we have to choose between putting in the high chair or putting in our golf clubs, and we choose the high chair. Hard, but we choose the high chair. Right? That's the kind of leading we're talking about. When you want a new shotgun and she says, no, we need new furniture. You say, okay. Then let's get the furniture. That's the servant leadership. Not saying, well, I'll make the money, I can spend it like I want. That's not the kind of leadership we're talking about. So we need you to respect our leadership and our need to fulfill God's design on us as leaders. Now, what a man will do if his wife keeps resisting and resisting and resisting his leadership, is he'll just give it up and say, you take it. I'm tired of it. You go on. I'll go to work. And he's thinking at work they accept my leadership and they respect it. They don't. You won't do it here at the house, so you just take over. You just handle it. A man will give up his responsibility. Some. There's three responses, right? Flight, he goes to work. You take it. Fold, I don't care. You do what you want to do. And fight. Now you do one of those three. You either say, nope, I'm ahead of this house, whether you like it or not, and I'm going to lead whether you want to follow or not. All right, that's the fight. That's not the way it ought to be either. But that's one of those three responses. So if you respect his need to lead, this will encourage him to be that servant leader. He will feel you respect his authority and leadership when you do first. You tell him you're thankful for his strength and enjoy being able to lean on him at times. You support his self-image as a leader. You never say, you're responsible, but we're still equal, so don't make a decision I don't agree with. You praise his good decisions. You know, it's easy to criticize our bad decisions, right? There's two things every man in America thinks he can do. He thinks he can control the grill, and he thinks he can coach football. Right? I mean, every one of us could be a better coach than what they do on Sunday, on Saturday afternoon, right? When it comes Monday, right? Because I can't believe they ran that play. Man, I ought to run this play, right? When we make bad decisions, we don't need to hear about that. We know that. We want to hear about when we do it right. You know, praise us for that. You are gracious if he makes a bad decision. You don't say, I told you so. Fight the urge, even though you did tell us so. You know, God uses, he can use the bad decisions. And he does use them, right? All things work together. Bad decisions are the all things. You know where that quiet and gentle spirit comes in, ladies? That's precious in God's sight. Because you trust in the sovereignty of God. And you know God's able to take that bad decision your husband made and he's going to bring good in it. He's going to use it to strengthen the family. And you can be at peace. You can have a quiet and gentle spirit if you'll trust God and believe he will bring good in every situation. Yeah, it may be hard on you and the kids, and y'all may have to go through some hard things because of that bad decision, but hey, it's in the hard times that we're molded into the image of Christ, right? So you can just say, God, you're in control of this thing. See, that's another thing. When you believe God's in control, you don't have to keep telling your husband, you're making a mistake, you're doing the wrong thing, don't do that, don't do that. All you got to do is respectfully say, honey, have you thought about this aspect of it, this angle? Have you thought about this verse? And then you can take your hands off. You know, it's between him and God now. And God can deal with it. God can open up his mind to see that what you're saying is really a good thing. Here's what happens. You can see he's making a mistake. He doesn't see it. You see it. And so you say, honey, I just want to ask you to think about this for a moment. Have you thought about this part of it? Yeah, I thought about that. That's not going to be a problem. You know he's making a mistake. But you're going to sit back and let God work on him. Because you believe God can. See, what happens if you go back and start harping? No, I told you that was wrong. I told you you're going to make a mistake. I told you that's going to get us in trouble. And you keep going back. You know what he's going to do? You know what he's feeling? Disrespected. So what's he going to do? He's going to bow up. And then it comes to a point, even if he knows you're right, he is not going to admit it. Because his pride has gotten in there. And he will go ahead and do it knowing it's going to cause problems because he is not going to give you the satisfaction of you being right because you have attacked his manhood and you've attacked him so much that he said, no way. Uh-uh. Whereas if you just said it once, backed off, then he doesn't have all that to deal with. You know? And God can work on him. And God does work on him. And that's what it means when he shall be one without a word. As he looks at your chaste and respectful behavior, right? As you respect him and act respectful, it lowers down his resistance, his pride. It lowers it down so he can accept what you have said and what God wants to show him. All right? So it's important. Say it, back off, let God deal with it. Okay. You disagree with him only in private and honor his authority in front of the kids. Do you ever say things like, oh, kid, your dad's just stupid? Oh, he's just an idiot. No, I hope not. All right? Or dad just being dad. You know, I mean, that's not a good thing. That makes him feel very disrespected. You give your reasons for disagreeing quietly and reasonably, but you never attack his right to lead. Okay? And again, we're going to talk about having a good fight tomorrow. But that will be part of it. All right, now let's move to insight. Respect his desire to analyze and to counsel. God does speak through the husband. Ephesians 5:22. Wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord. God will speak through men even if they are unbelievers. You believe God can speak through an unbelieving man? Yeah, I mean, he used Cyrus to help lead the Israelites out of Babylonian captivity, and he wasn't a believer. God doesn't, he's not restricted to somebody being a believer. Your husband has a desire to analyze and counsel, and to counsel. That's why when you are sharing a problem with him, he jumps in there and wants to solve it. That's his nature. He's got to stand back. Men, you got to not do that, but that's what our tendency is to do. So acknowledge and appreciate that he's trying to analyze this situation. He wants to give wise counsel. Women are more susceptible to be deceived. Now, this may be offensive to you, but it should not be. Because over in 1 Timothy chapter 2, Paul is talking about men leading, and it's not acceptable for a woman to teach or exercise authority over a man. Rather, she is to remain quiet. Verse 13, for Adam was formed first, then Eve. In other words, Paul said it's proper for men to lead because men were created first. God set the order when he created Adam first. So it was not a cultural thing, but it goes back to creation. And he gives a second reason why the men are to teach. And Adam was not deceived, but the woman was deceived and became a transgressor. And he's talking about the Garden of Eden, where the serpent deceived the woman into taking the fruit. When he said, no, God just doesn't want you to be like him. You go ahead and eat. It'll be all right. She was deceived. Adam just outright disobeyed. All right, now, ladies, you know there are certain times of the month that things are much more exasperating, more obsessive. All right, PMS is a reality. Let's don't pretend it's not. It's part of the hormonal cycle. And during that time, you know, you've heard me say probably that when I understood this concept, and having four daughters, I came to understand it fairly clearly. There were certain times I just needed to leave the house. At those times, men, nothing you say is the right thing. And if you don't say anything, that's the wrong thing. You just buckle down and realize it will pass. Just give it time, right? But I'd have ladies come up to me on Sunday and say, oh, preacher, I need to talk to you. It's, oh, you just don't know what's going on in my house. I need to talk to you. I got problems. And I would say, okay, I'll be glad to talk to you. Call the church and we'll make an appointment. I'd usually say Wednesday or Thursday. All right, this was Sunday. I was thinking, okay, it may be a real problem, and that's fine. But it may be that she just in the throes of PMS, and boy, everything looks like it is just true. You would be surprised how many times I'd get a call on about Tuesday or Wednesday. Oh, I don't need to come in now. Everything's worked itself out. So you know that on certain times of the month, things become major things in your life. And that's a reality. But it is at those times that you particularly need your husband's protection. You need to come to him and say, you know, I'm just obsessing about this. I mean, this is just bothering me so bad. Talk to me about it. And men, you need to know your wife well enough to know, okay, this is the part of the cycle where she is just really attacked. You know, and the satanic and demonic attack increases during those times too. Satan knows. He knows that you're, because of the hormones going on, that you just, hormones, it is unbelievable how much hormones affect us as humans. I mean, for the men as well as the woman, and we're going to talk about that tomorrow, you know, testosterone is a hormone, and man, you would not believe, ladies, how it affects us. But, you know, you have your hormonal issues and we have ours. But during those times, guys and ladies, come to your husband, get his advice and his counsel particularly. But at all times, go to your husband. See what God would say to him. You know, God's word to the wife is clear. Submit to your husband and respect him, right? Okay, so let's say that Wayne comes up to you and he says, you know, we really need a teacher in our children's class. Would you teach that class? And then Wayne would wisely say, now, you know, you pray about it, and you go talk to your husband about it, and y'all pray about it. All right? Well, you don't like to say no to people, particularly Wayne. You know, he's your pastor. You don't want him to think well of you. So you're kind of feeling pressure. And so you go home and you say, honey, you know, Wayne asked me if I'd teach a children's Sunday school class. What do you think I ought to do? And the husband, he doesn't care whether Wayne likes him or not. So he says, I don't think, you know, you've got a lot to do. You really are really under it already. I think you need to just let Wayne know that at this time, it's just not going to be the best time for you to do it. And you've prayed about it as a husband, and therefore, you know, you're not just coming off the cuff, but you've prayed about it, and this is what you've come up with. All right, now, you say, but what if God really does want you to teach that class, and your husband is just, because of selfishness or some other reason, has said he doesn't want you to? All right, well, who's going to be in the hot seat? You or your husband? All right, the Bible tells you clearly submit to your husband, right? As unto the Lord. So if the husband has missed God on this thing and he has told you not to teach it when you really God's will is for you to teach it, you're in the clear because you're obeying God's command for you to submit to your husband. It's your husband that's got to get with God and God's going to deal with him about that. You see what we're talking about? God's giving you a perfect place of peace, ladies. Submission is a covering. Headship is a covering. God wants you to get under that protection. When I see a woman that's fretful or nervous or upset or anxious, I know one of two things is happening. Either her husband is not giving her protection. By that I mean she comes and asks him a question. He says, I'll do what you want. I don't care. That's not our luxury, husbands. We got to seek the Lord about it. But what will happen, ladies, if he tells you what he thinks you should do and you don't do it a couple of times, then he's going to quit saying it because he feels disrespected, right? So if you go to him and say, no, honey, I really want you to seek God and see what God wants me to do. And he said, well, why should I? You're going to do what you want to anyway. You're going to say, no, honey, I understand this concept now, and I'm really going to do what you believe God wants me to do. And it's going to be between you and God. And then he comes back, he prays about it. He says, look, I think you ought to teach. It'd be a great thing. You teach. If he says, no, I don't think you ought to, you think, well, okay, I will submit to your leadership. So God has given us men the desire to advise and to counsel and to analyze. And ladies, take advantage of that and come under our protection as we seek to give you correct and godly counsel. All right. Your husband will feel you respect his insights and counsel when you tell him up front you just need his ear. Don't complain to him later that he always tries to fix you. You thank him for his advice without acting insulted or like he doesn't care about your feelings. You recognize his problem-solving approach and his male brand of empathy. Notice male brand. You realize your vulnerabilities, especially among males, and value his protection. You counsel him respectfully when you differ with his ideas. You can be right but wrong at the top of your voice. You sometimes let him fix things and applaud his solutions. You let him know that you believe God has made us male and female for a purpose and that we need each other. You admit that you can sin and thank him for his perception and godly counsel. And then the last area is sexuality. Respect his desire for sexual intimacy. A. His sexual release is like emotional release is to you. A man has a buildup of sexual tension because of our testosterone. Depending on the age, it tends to dwindle with age, but a male will have a buildup every 2 or 3 days. He needs that sexual release, just like you need your emotional release. You need to release your emotions. You need to talk and get these things out, right? Well, he has his sexual tensions. And listen to this, ladies. Your emotional release, how that is important to you, his sexual release is that important to him. Now, if he were to say to you, look, honey, you know, we just talked yesterday. We don't need to talk again until at least 3 days, do we? In 3 days, we'll get together and, you know, and you can have another emotional release. Right? Now, how would you feel? All right, now think about it. Conversation, emotional release to a woman is like sexual release to a man. That's the best way I can say it. And I think the quicker we all come to understand that, the better it's going to be for our marriages. And, you know, that's why, men, you need to allow your wife to have her emotional releases. You need to be there for her emotionally. Because she's going to be there for you in your sexual release. All right? Again, to think that you cannot have an emotional release, you would feel unloved, right? All right, you come in and say, honey, I really need to talk to you. And you say, the man says, I just don't feel like it. I'm really not in the mood to talk. I mean, I got a headache. I'm just not in the mood to talk. I tell you what. 2 days, we'll talk. Now, you know, you'd feel put off, right? You'd feel hurt. Okay, we're getting an idea across here a little bit. All right, so that's why I tell people the way you treat your husband inside the bedroom has a lot to do with the way he's going to treat you outside the bedroom. But it goes the other way. The way you treat your wife outside the bedroom, you know, you can't ignore her all day long, 2 or 3 days, and then say, hey, I want sex. That ain't going to work. And it ain't fair to expect it to work, right? You need to be attentive to her. And if you are attentive to her, it's amazing how she will be attentive to you. If you are attentive to him, it's amazing how that can affect his attentiveness to you. I mean, you ever notice how nice he is for a couple of hours after intimacy? I mean, he feels connected. He's out there working, helping you around the house. Or a couple of hours before, he's trying to get some points, right? Let's get it where it is, guys. Let's just admit it. You know, a woman will have an emotional affair. She'll give sex to have an emotional affair, right? She'll, in order to relate to a guy emotionally, she'll give sex. And a guy will relate emotionally in order to get sex. So here you have these two people that, you know, they're married to other people and they aren't getting their whatever at home met. And so they end up connecting at work. And he listens to her and he's all attentive to her because he's got one thing in mind, right? Okay. And he knows, I got to be attentive, right? I got to play the game. She's thinking, all right, man, I know what he's really after, but I want this emotional release. And so I'm going to be attentive and emotional release. And then I'll, you know, we'll get the sexual release. So this whole sexual dynamic and tension is so much a part of marriage, and yet we don't ever talk about it. But it is one of the major areas that couples have struggles with. And we're going to talk about some of those tomorrow. But it is a source of tension. And I'm convinced if man had not sinned, it wouldn't be as bad. But because of the fall, because of sin, there is this dichotomy in marriage. You know, I mean, but it's the same thing about the woman wants this emotional release and the guy's thinking, I'm soon just watch TV. I don't want to talk. I want to watch the ball game. So he's as bad about that, right? I mean, there's just this that's just this big difference. It's this gap, and we got to somehow close the gap, and we're going to talk about that tomorrow to make it better. All right, having said that, he will feel you respect his desire for sexual intimacy when you understand his need for sexual release just as you need emotional release. See it that way. You tell him what you admire about his masculinity. You respond to him sexually more often and initiate sex periodically. All right, homework assignment. We're going to give you an opportunity to do this. Did we say they'd do it here or they would? Okay, here's the thing. Let's just stay here 15 more minutes. It's 2:00. You're still getting out early. For 15 minutes, we're going to do what we did the first session. Men, you pick one of these areas that you want to talk about with your wife. You go down the chart. Wives, remember the ground rules, the rules of engagement. You cannot be defensive. You must let him speak and you listen. You may ask questions of clarification. This is about how he perceives your respect of him. Pick one of the areas, men. Go through that, each one of those. How did you rate your wife? Ladies, how did you rate yourself? Talk about it. And then in the subsequent days after you're home, pick up and go through these other areas. All right, this is again will be the helpful part for you. After you have finished, you're free to go. Now, I know some of you in here have not seen the personality, the beaver, the lion, the golden retriever. And if you want to see that video, it's about an hour. I do have it here, and I will put it on for you if you want to stay around. If you don't want to, that's perfectly fine. But I want to make it available because some of you have not seen it and it really can help your marriage. Is there anybody that would like to stay around and see it? Don't feel like you're going to hurt my feelings if you don't want to. But if you want to, I want to make it available. Okay. All right. Y'all couldn't see all the people over here raise their hand, could you? Like those preachers that give those invitations. Now every eye closed, every head bowed. Yes, and you, brother. I have looked, and there ain't been a soul raising a hand. And you, brother, and you thinking, over there. And I think, ain't nobody raised a hand. Wayne, you don't do that, do you?
All right, real quick, before we launch into that sign that AP gave us to go over one of those tables. Tomorrow, again, Continental Breakfast starts at 7. First session starts in here at 9:15, I believe is what the schedule says. But you need to remember, tomorrow we'll be checking out. So before you come in here, go ahead and load your luggage out of your room, into your car, stop by the front desk, just drop your key off, and you'll be good. So once you come down, there's no going back up to the room, because we'll be in sessions until we just finish the head home. All right? Everybody got that? All right. Also, tomorrow, we've got some time set aside. I think it's a 20-minute slot in there. We put panel discussion down. So if you have some questions that have maybe come to your mind as we've gone through some of these sessions, we're going to take that time, and AT and I will just be up here. If you don't have some questions, I've got some questions that I'm going to ask AT and some things we'll talk about a little bit. But maybe you've got some questions. You can ask those tomorrow. If you don't want to ask it during that time, write it down on a sheet of paper. You can hand it to me, and I'll anonymously read it, and we'll talk about it. But I hope that your mind's been engaged as we've gone through this. I really feel like this is going to help you when you leave. That as you go through those trouble spots in your marriage, you're going to come back to this. You're going to go, man, we're on a crazy cycle. What went wrong? How am I feeling disrespected? How is she feeling unloved? What can we do to change that and get back on the energized cycle? But if you have questions, we'll address some of those tomorrow that maybe have been brought to your mind. All right? So do that homework assignment. Work over one of those tables. And when you're done with that, you're free to go enjoy Pigeon Forge, Gatlinburg. Have a good night. We'll see you tomorrow morning, 9:15, right here. All right? Any questions? All right. Carry on. Yes.
What was the video
referring to? Yeah, so AT led us in a marriage retreat 2 years ago. And in part of that retreat, one of the sessions that he did was over personality types. Why you two see things so differently. And the session covers four personality types that are presented in four animals. You've got a lion, you've got a beaver, you've got an otter, and a golden retriever. And it's just basically personality types and characteristics that those animals kind of describe. If you haven't seen it, I would encourage you to watch it, or at least get the information from AT. Maybe you find it online and watch it later if you don't want to do it now. But it really helps you understand the personality type of your spouse and kind of why they are the way they are, how God has wired them. The lion's kind of the forceful, out front, A-type personality. Beavers, the organizational. Those are the people who, some of you remember this, we squeeze the toothpaste to you from the bottom. And we work all the way up to the top. The otters just grab it, squeeze, and it drives a beaver absolutely berserk when they do that. Berserk. So, otters are fun, playful. Golden retrievers are kind and caring, compassionate people. So understanding that, I'll let you know kind of why your spouse sees things a little bit differently as well. Good question. Any other questions? All right. Yep. You're good.
Pastor, thanks for this. When would we watch this? I guess.
Yeah, you can watch it. If you want to stick around and watch it once everybody's out of here, it's about 45 minutes to an hour or something like that. We can set it up. You can watch it. Be right here on the screen and you can take time to do that. If not, you can get the information, and I don't know if it's available online.
I don't think it is. He's okay. Dead, and no.
And released it. So. No.
That's dead. Right. He's dead. His wife killed him. He was going through this material.
How many of you, I remember the hands from yesterday, how many of you were here 2 years ago and saw that?
Or in the sessions that we did. And I did them at church.
Oh, yeah, you did it at the church as well. So it's good stuff. I mean, it really it's one of those eye-opening things again. Like, oh, I realize how their brain works now. Yeah. Okay.
So
any other questions? All right. Guys, work on that last table AT went over and answer all the questions. And enjoy. And whenever you're done, have a good time to get work. Good forge.